everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. We are thrilled today to have another of our writers that have worked with Hallmark. This is novelist Jenny Hale is here. One of her books is being turned into this weekend's movie with Christmas Wishes, Mistletoe Kisses. And I'm Rachel, and thank you so much, Jenny, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what we like to do when we have guests on the podcast is give you a chance to introduce yourself and tell us what inspired you to become a writer.
I'm Jenny Hale. I'm a romantic fiction author. And gosh, what inspired me? I think I didn't really realize that I wanted to write full time until adulthood. And I was just a voracious reader. And as I was reading, I think I had two authors I was reading at that time, both British authors, Jill Mansell and Harriet Evans. I was reading their books, sort of just devouring them one after another. And I sat on the couch beside my husband one night and I thought, I could write one of these. And he knows that I'm just creative enough that he was like, well, go ahead and do it. So I wrote one. I wrote a book and it was terrible. It was horrible. It has never seen the light of day. But when I went back to reading, I started to sort of notice some things that the authors were doing and had some aha moments like, oh, I see how they did that. You know, that was really hard to write, but I see how they did that. And then I figured out where my weaknesses were, went back, read a whole bunch of books on writing on my specific weaknesses and wrote a second book. And that book was coming home for Christmas.
Oh, really? So did you read a lot of romantic fiction or a wide variety?
Yeah, I mean, I read a little bit of everything and I still do. But romantic fiction is sort of where I tend to fall. If I were to take all my books and make piles, romantic fiction would be enormous compared to the others.
What has been your appeal to romantic fiction? What do you like about it?
I think I just love the happy ending idea. I'm one of those people that I cannot watch stressful or scary movies on TV because when I do, I just get so anxious for those people that I can't let it go. And so the thing about a happy ending is just you sort of, by the time you're done, you have that big hard eyes and sigh and you think, oh, that was just so great. You know, life is so great. And so that's sort of what draws me to it. Cause you know, so many times you get frustrated and tense and busy. And it's just a really nice release for me to be able to read a book that sort of takes me to my happy place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it is definitely the escapism is really relaxing for sure. Yeah. I agree with you. Was it challenging to sort of make that transition from a reader versus to a writer as far as kind of putting them together and thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely different. The two sides of it are definitely different. I'm a totally different person when I'm reading a book than I am when I'm writing one. But I think the hardest part for me at the beginning, it was short-lived, but just sort of finding my voice and finding my style because I didn't really know what it was. I just knew that I was a storyteller and I've always been a chatty person and my friends all knew me as a storyteller, but I never really knew what my voice was. And in writing, there's a certain science to it, I guess, to make sure that, you know, you're not dragging on and on, but you're also getting that point across in the way that you want to. So that was the hardest part, which you don't have to deal with when you're reading. You just hear their voice and enjoy it.
What do you try to show in your protagonists, in your female characters? Is there anything that you tend to gravitate towards, or what, does it just depend on the story?
It depends on the story, but I mean, I think every single character that I write, down to the minor characters, I just want them to be real and feel real. Mm. And so I know that my genre tends to be a lighter read, but when you're writing it, it's actually a very delicate dance to make that complete magic seem real when you're reading it, because you have to sort of write these characters in a way that they would, that the reader doesn't look at it and go, oh, whatever. You know? Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And so that's, I think that's where I really focus when I'm making my characters. And when everybody says, oh, well, who would you see playing this character? I can never answer that because I create it. It's they're their own person in my head. It's not based on anyone.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I think like some people say, oh, these books are sort of fluffy books, but I think if you don't like take them serious enough to a certain extent, then they're not going to be as satisfying escapism because you need that character to feel real in order for the happy ending to be that satisfying happy ending that you want.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think people who love these books, they know what they're getting into when they buy them. You know, they're buying into the happy ending of it and the ride that it takes to get there. And I think that's sort of the mindset that you have to have when you read them. And people, you know, who love that sort of thing completely fall into it and immerse themselves into it. And those are the readers that are the ones that stick around that always, you know, want to hear what you've got coming next.
Yeah, but even those readers, they have to have a character they connect with. Otherwise, you're just gonna. Because I mean, I love romantic fiction and I love romantic comedies, obviously, because I have this podcast. But I don't like all of them, that's for sure. And the ones that don't work for me are the ones that the characters feel kind of overly manipulative or just kind of shrill. Then I'm not into that at all. That's why I think wedding movies / books are tough sells for me because the whole Bridezilla thing, that is not for me. I don't have any help for that behavior. And it's just like, and I don't know, other people might find that funny, that kind of thing. That's not for me.
Well, I think you're right in that you have to identify with one of the characters. Yeah. And I think too, that's one of the reasons that I really love having multi-generational stories because I really think that there are elements to each generation that we can latch on to.
Yeah.
You know, there's that wisdom that we get as we grow older that we totally understand when we hear that grandparent talking to that person. But there's also that naivety or that, you know, just trying to figure out your life aspect that we've been through as well. So I really love writing multi-generational stories, and all of my stories have, I can't think of one that doesn't have a grandparent and also a child.
Yeah.
In them.
Yeah. So for coming home for Christmas, what was the process kind of like of actually getting that first book published? How were you able to kind of make that happen?
I was a classroom elementary school teacher for 18 years. And this was a hobby at best. I mean, I had only written that one book that was a disaster that I chucked. And then I wrote Coming Home for Christmas. And I've watched enough American Idol to know that there are people with dreams that clearly will not recognize those dreams. And they think they're great. You know, they think they're great. Right. So, I was teaching full time. I had written this book and I had no idea if it was any good. No idea. And, you know, I never let any of my friends read it because they're all going to tell you it's nice and shake their head, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just held on to it and I started submitting to different publishers. And I submitted for about 2 years before, I made a slight tweak, and it was only based on my own anxiety. And then that's when I got my deal. But what I did was I had been submitting for 2 years, and I joined a writing group in my city where I lived at the time in Richmond, Virginia. And someone told me that if you're getting feedback from the publishers, then you've got something. Keep going. And I was getting feedback. And so I started to hyperanalyze, because I always do that when I don't understand why something's not happening. And yeah. It had been 2 years of submissions and, like, you know, 10 at a time. And when I'd get a rejection, I'd send out another one. And finally I thought, well, when I started this whole process, I was reading British fiction. Both of those ladies, Jill Mansell and Harriet Evans, were British. And I thought, well, maybe I don't know what I'm writing or how I'm writing it. Maybe it's something that would be better received in the UK. So I found my current publisher, Bookatour, that way by submitting to see if I could get some feedback. And darn if he didn't come back with a two-book deal. And I thought, oh, my gosh. So there it goes. And I had no idea. And I'm still with them today.
That's amazing. So had you gotten an agent at that point, or was it after, or how?
I was submitting simultaneously to agents and publishers. And at the time, Bookatour did not require an agent. I don't know now. I mean, it's been years and years, but so I still am operating unagented.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Just through my publisher. Mm-hmm.
Good for you. That's great. That must have been so exciting. Did you totally have a that thing you do moment where you're like,
Yeah, I mean, I just sat there and stared at it for a while, because my first thought was, what? Because I wasn't sure. You know, you just get no for so long that you're like blinking at it, staring at it. You know, like, is this real? What is this? And so I had that moment where I'm like, okay, I'm not going crazy. And then I freaked out and I got really excited. And again, I didn't really even understand publishing. I mean, I was a school teacher. I didn't do this for a living. And so I didn't really even understand what I was looking toward in terms of edit. And learning how to write and writing the next book and all the good stuff that comes along with being a full-time author. And it sort of just fell upon me, and I was just swimming in it while I was still teaching. So
that's great.
So I didn't have any idea. I just was like, oh, yay. Oh, good. It's going to have a cover on it.
That's great. Yeah. My sister is a published author. She's done some picture books. She's working on a graphic novel now, some really cute little books. And so she's had 4 so far, but her first one, we kind of vicariously experienced that through her, like, oh my gosh, it's her book, look.
I carried it around for a while. I carried it to school, carried it around. I had it in a staff meeting, I think.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it was really cool to see that very first one. And it still is. I mean, I still, even now, when I get my box of books and I open them up, it's just as exciting now as it was that very first time, if not more exciting, because now I know what I just did and I know what I went through and how it made it, you know, it made it to the world.
That's great. Yeah. When the closest thing I've ever personally had anything like that was, because I have been writing reviews for years and years, and also I have a YouTube channel over on my other channel. And all of a sudden, I got an email in January from this person who said they were from Rotten Tomatoes and they wanted to add me as a critic. And I thought at first it was a joke. I was like, oh, somebody's, this is spam. This is some kind of whatever. It's a joke. No way. And then I, you know, looked her up and realized, oh my gosh, there really is. This person works for Rotten Tomatoes. And I was just like, what? I can't believe I had one of those freak out sessions. I couldn't believe it. I was so excited.
So you understand those stages though, where you're like, is this what? Right. You know? And then you're like, oh my gosh, I think someone likes me.
Right.
I think someone they like
it. Someone thinks what I write is good. What? So that was really, really fun. That's great. So how did you get the whole idea for Coming Home for Christmas?
I don't know. I mean, people ask me all the time what inspires me to write different stories. And there's no one thing. I just sort of absorb everything around me all the time. I listen to lots of music. I read lots of quotes. You know, you watch movies. Sometimes I'll watch a movie and just the feeling that I get between two characters, that chemistry feeling, I'll then want to write a totally different story with totally different people with that same like anxiety or that same happiness. Mm-hmm. And so it might even be something really under the radar that'll just hit me. And then I'll go and just come up with something. And sometimes the stories roll off my mind. And sometimes I have to shoot ideas off my editor for a while, you know, before I get it. But different, every book is different. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of, you know, get it everywhere. I cannot write very well at home. I have to be out in public. And I think it's the way some people have a fan when they sleep, you know. Yeah. I need that buzzing, just sort of buzzing movement and talking and watching people around me to be able to come up with ideas.
Well, see, that's really smart, though. See, you could be like, I am going to write a book on the beach in December.
Yep.
So excuse to go. Expense it. Expense trip.
That's right. Research. Well, you know, I tell my husband all the time, I'm like, I have to have coffee at the coffee shop. I have to every day. I have to go to the coffee shop. And he lets me. I mean, he's so supportive and he lets me do that all the time. In fact, he will often, I'll just get this text and it'll be a link to a brand new coffee shop in Nashville or somewhere around town where I can go because he knows that I need it, you know, because I can't do it very well at my house.
That's funny. So I think... Well, I should say first, so we love Nina Wyman on our podcast. She was actually the first guest that we ever had, writer Nina Wyman. And and I, if I'm not mistaken, she, I think, found your book and submitted it to Hallmark.
She did. She, she found Coming Home for Christmas.
Yeah.
She was the very first person to contact me about Coming Home for Christmas.
So she, she contacted you and then she worked on the adaptation. How was that whole experience working with Nina and also just seeing your book get turned into a Hallmark movie?
I think one of the things about the process that may or may not be different than other authors, I don't know, but is that I really just love watching someone like Nina adapt my story. I'm not territorial of my story because the Hallmark viewers, that's a whole new medium and a whole new group of people. And so it's so much fun to watch how she changed things and what she did with my storyline to fit that group. And so that was the fun for me. And so, and Nina is really good about having conversations back and forth and showing me what she's doing. And I know we had a big talk about, I mentioned it to her about the, what was it they had? It's like a Christmas, some kind of Christmas roll.
Oh yeah. The Yule log.
Kind of like the Yule log. Okay. So that's what it was. And I joked with her cause I said, you know, we get a bunch of Southerners eating a Yule log. I don't, because I didn't have it in the book. And it was, she was saying that, and because it was a major, you know, a major topic in the movie was this Yule log. And so I was like, could we make it like apple pie or something? You know, and she was saying, well, Yule is a very Christmas word. And so, you know, on Hallmark being the Christmas movie channel, Yule log is just a very festive sort of name for this dessert that they're going to have. And so I let it, you know, I let it go. I said, it's fine. But that's our big joke is my big joke is that in the South, I had to go Google it. I swore that when it came on, I never did it, but I was like, I'm going to bake a Yule log and live tweet this because I've never had one before.
Yeah. That was really funny because the first interview we ever did with her, she talked about, this was before this movie was coming out. She talked about the Yule log. She's like, I need to come up with something. There has to be some new thing for Christmas. Because she's written so many of these. Of course she's Jewish.
She did a great job.
It's so funny.
That was something that I didn't even notice, you know, that she explained to me was, cause I was like, couldn't it be like, I was thinking Southern stuff. Can we do like an apple pie or, you know, and she was saying that they're working toward that Christmas and it's a really Christmassy name. And I totally got it, you know, but we just laughed because I said, I totally need to bake one of these.
Well, and I remember.
I still to this day, I've never had one.
her saying that was such kismet, because Danica's mother, that's like a big thing for them, is making the Yule log. And in fact, she was on Home and Family, her, Danica's mom, making the Yule log.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
So
that's so funny.
Yeah. So was it very surreal then to watch the movie and see your own story on screen?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you just keep thinking, like, when, especially for that particular book, because when I wrote those words, in my mind, I was not an author yet. I was a teacher writing for fun.
Yeah.
And so to see how far that book could go and the life that it carried on was just, it was just surreal. I mean, to think, like, I wrote that, I used to, when my kids were little, after I put them in bed, their rooms were sort of right across the hall. And I would put my computer, my laptop, in the floor in the hallway and lie down on my belly and write. And I was their nightlight. And so I would do that. That's when I wrote, was after they were asleep.
Yeah.
And I still to this day have no idea what motivated me to put that much effort into something that I had no idea what would happen to it. Because I wasn't under contract. I didn't have any reason to write it, but I did it. It's a little different now because everybody in the family sort of greatly accommodates me now, since it's my job and it's my full-time job. Uh-huh. So they're all, you know, they know mom's working all day and I can go out and do my work. But back then, you know, I taught a full day of school.
Yeah.
And so to see it then on TV with actors portraying the characters I'd come up with was just too much.
Yeah. That's really cute. I love that idea that you were your kids' nightlight.
I often wonder if they'll hear the typing of keys and for the rest of their lives, they'll think of their mother.
Oh,
I
hope so. That would be so cute. I love that. We'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. We are delighted to get to work with Thrive Cosmetics. And right now you can go to thrivecosmetics.com/hallmarkies, get 15% off your first purchase that's thrivecosmetics.com, thrivecosmetics.com/hallmarkies, and you can get 15% off. They have been a very impressive company to work with. You can get your product auto-replenished, or you can just order. They are all natural, free of parabens and sulfates. And I just was very impressed with the product and how light it felt on my skin. I didn't feel like I was wearing makeup. I also felt like there was just a cleanness, a lightness. It didn't feel cakey. It didn't feel like sometimes you get with makeup. They're also vegan and cruelty-free, certified by Leaping Bunny and PETA. And they try the cause, CAUSE, in Thrive Cosmetics, is about giving back. And they try to advocate for causes that help women emerging from homelessness, surviving domestic abuse, fighting cancer. And so that's really, really neat. And they have mascara. They have this one called the Buildable Blur CC Cream. And like I said, it's very light, good product. It's not just that they're doing good. They make a really good product. You can get 50% off your first purchase, thrivecosmetics.com/hallmarkies. That's thrivecosmetics.com/hallmarkies. Enter code hallmarkies to get 15% off. Yeah, it must have been exciting to be like, Winnie Cooper is playing my character. This is so fun.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy because I used to watch her. I mean, we're not too different in age, and I used to watch her as a girl, you know, to think that I would grow up and you know, have that connection to her. It's just, it, like I said, it was very surreal.
Mm-hmm.
Very, and still is. I mean, even the second time around, it still is.
Yeah.
But that first time was a big one.
We really liked that one. We really enjoyed it. Definitely, because Nina had told us, it has some Sabrina vibes, has sort of some things like the movie Sabrina. And I can agree. I think it did definitely have those vibes.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, our only major gripe with this was that we didn't like her dress, her blue dress. It was not our favorite. But other than that, if that's the only flaw, it's pretty darn good. I would say that one.
That's good. You know, I'd heard that about the Sabrina, and it's funny because I really love that movie. Yeah. And so maybe subconsciously years later, it manifested itself in my, you know, creative brain, but I never considered it while I was writing it. But after I wrote it and someone mentioned it, I thought it does. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting how, I mean, it's such a classic story. So it's probably makes sense that you wouldn't have thought of it, but it would, those elements kind of just naturally sort of come. But I did notice that in your books, you have, it seems like about half of them are about Christmas, half of them are about on the beach. And so I was wondering what the sort of the story is of that. I mean, everybody loves Christmas, so maybe that's obvious, but what sort of draws you to either side of those, either Christmas or the beach?
Well, it's funny how it ended up, because when I wrote Coming Home for Christmas, I titled it Flipped for You, because in the book, she flips a coin. Allie flips a coin to determine what she does. And so it was called Flipped for You. And the Christmas element of it was pretty small. It just happened over Christmas. There wasn't a whole lot of hoopla. But the, you know, the Christmas party was pretty big and that kind of thing. And then once the book was contracted, it was my publisher's sort of foresight to say, this needs to be Christmas. Like, let's put some more Christmas in this. Yeah. Let's give it a Christmas title. Let's market this as a Christmas story. And then the natural progression is I really hustle and I write two books every year. So naturally, when you take about 6 months to write a book and it comes out at Christmas, in six more months, you're going to have summer. And so the next story just naturally became a book that would be released in the summer, which would be your beach read. And that's how I ended up doing a Christmas one and a summer one, because I just haven't stopped. I've done two a year since that first contract.
That's
and
amazing.
So I've just continued on with it.
Mm-hmm. And did you grow up going to the beach a lot? Or
I did. I grew up on the East Coast. So right outside of Richmond, Virginia is where I grew up. And we would go, I mean, Virginia Beach is right there, but we would vacation a lot in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. And I mean, every year as an adult, I would take my kids. So a lot of my stories are set there. And that's one of the things after 2 years ago, we moved to Nashville, Tennessee. And that's what I miss about being in Nashville is being near the beach, because I can't get to it. It takes us about somewhere between 8 and 10 hours, depending on traffic, to get to Florida, to get to the beach. But we do it every year because we're beach people.
Yeah, there's nothing I love more than going to the being at the beach, going to the beach. I love the sound of the ocean. I love being in the water. It's my favorite thing in the whole world.
Mm-hmm. Mine too. It really just can suck all the stress right out of you.
Yeah. The beach, and then step down, I'd say for me, Disney World/Disneyland. And then pretty much any other vacation I can do without. I'll do it if I get the opportunity, you know, I'll go someplace or try something new. But as far as like what I'm really, what I dream about, what I wish I could, you know, be doing, those are the two things I like to see. Like to go to the beach. A lake is also acceptable. Don't do a lake.
Any water, you know. Yeah. I often say I think I'm going to retire into the water, because there's just that giant lapping water that, you know, sitting outside. My favorite thing at the beach is when we're all sunburned and tired and we've been out there all day, and we come home and we make something like at the cottage or whatever, and we just sit outside and we can, I read my books then in the evening and have a glass of wine and just sit out on that porch and watch the waves for the rest of the evening till it gets dark. That's my favorite.
Heaven. That's heaven.
Mm-hmm.
The best. So yeah, I agree with you there. 100%. So, okay. Then we have Christmas Wishes, Mistletoe Kisses. And this is a really cute story. Why don't you tell people just a little bit about what the story is for this one?
Okay. So I'm going to grab the book for this. This book was published originally by Book Couture in 2015, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
So it's 4 years old for me, which is 8 books ago. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
It did come out last year with Grand Central, which was fun. But basically, it's about a single mother named Abby Fuller. And she has always wanted to be an interior designer, but with an unexpected pregnancy and then becoming a mom, she just sort of put that on hold because she just devotes her entire life to her amazing little son.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is caring for a woman named Caroline Sinclair, an older woman, sort of as like an in-home nurse. And in the book, the older woman lived sort of on the outskirts of the property with all kinds of woods around. So she couldn't really see the main house, but the older woman said, my son lives in the main house on the property. And this older woman had a little little cottage for retirement. And she said, he needs a decorator for Christmas. I've offered you, I think you'd be great at it. I'd like you to go meet with them. And so she drives around the property. It's enormous, and gets there, and it's this mansion of a home with this crazy wealthy guy who needs her to decorate his enormous estate for Christmas. And she's thinking, I've never even had a job as a decorator. How am I ever going to do this? So the Christmas festivities and romance ensue from that. And it's sort of, how does she get it all done in the midst of it? Of course, he's too busy for any kind of festivities. And
right.
So she's got to sort of pull him out of that and teach him a little something about Christmas.
Yeah. The bad man of business has to get
That's respect. Right.
That's right.
We have to teach him the error of his ways, right?
Yeah. That is really cool. I've read the book and I enjoyed it very much. And I've actually seen the movie because I was able to watch it on DVD. And I know you've held out. I saw your tweet.
I know. I have it. It's sitting here just burning in my hand. But I'm going to be live tweeting during the show.
That'll
and
be so
I didn't want to have seen it before everybody else sees it. There's something just, it's really Christmas morning. You know, there's something just really exciting about watching it with everyone else for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular movie, I mean, with Nina on the first movie, you know how Nina is, and it was just very easy. I knew all kinds of stuff, and you know, we chatted, and this movie was a little different. It was produced by a different company, and so I didn't know the screenwriter, so I didn't get all that I didn't get the goods on it. So I'm going to really seriously be watching it with you all. And I will not know what's going to happen until it does. So I don't know what parts are in it. I don't know what made it in and what didn't. And I can't wait to watch it.
That's awesome. So you weren't at all, you didn't find out kind of about casting, or you weren't really as involved in behind the scenes of this one compared to Home for Christmas Day.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, they all run it a little differently. And like I said, you know, to each his own, and I kind of roll with whatever they send my way. So for me, I just took it as, okay, well, then let's make it a huge surprise, because I kind of like that idea too. You know, do I want to know? Do I want to know what's wrapped up under my tree before I open it or not? You know,
yeah.
So it's different with everybody. And I think just Nina has that personality that it's very easy to get to know, and then you can just, you know, you chat naturally anyway. And this was an entirely different group of people. So they just operate differently, but you know, every movie's different, and I can't wait to see it.
That's a really good way to look at things, because it's got to be hard when it's your baby, you know, it's your book, like you worked so hard on it to sort of transfer it over to somebody else. It's got to be a little bit difficult, but I admire that in authors when they say, okay, you know, I'm going to let you do your job now.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're the experts in that field,
right?
You know, and it's Hallmark, you know, which is the, you know, they are a beast at Christmas, romantic Christmas movies.
Yeah.
I have no worries at all that it's not going to be amazing. And so for me, the trust is already there.
Yeah.
And I trust anyone at Hallmark would, you know, have produced movies, you know, it's got to be great. So I'm just excited to see it.
Well, and Jill,
easy to let them have that then.
Yeah. Well, and Jill Wagner's so great.
Yes.
She's always, always good in her roles. And it was kind of fun to welcome Matthew Davis into the Hallmark family. From this is his redemption from being the, from being Warner on Legally Blonde. In the rom-com world, he can hopefully stop being a villain. And so that's really fun. And the little boy they got is Hallmark always does a great job with casting children. And this kid, he is really cute. They did a great
job.
Oh,
I can't wait.
Yeah. 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 So I think you're going to enjoy it. And one thing I wondered, because when I first saw, I'll be honest, when I first saw the clip this summer of it, I was like, oh, I don't know, because this is before I'd read the book, because I'm not a huge fan of the party planning movies slash stories, because it can just be kind of boring. Like if I can't attend said party, like too much time with the minutia of planning the party just is not interesting to me. And that was one thing I wondered about in this book, like how, and really also in Coming Home for Christmas Day, Coming Home for Christmas, how are you able to kind of avoid that like expositionary mind
Again, it comes down to the characters and writing those characters so that is just a detail in their lives.
Yeah.
And when you're going through it with them, it's not about hanging curtains and putting bows up as much as it's about like the major turmoil going through their head while they're putting that bow up.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's sort of how I do it, because I think they're, you know, as you're writing characters and, you know, characters naturally will fall into a specific job. You know, he didn't have anything. You need a decorator. That would be a perfect fit for a character. And let's bring her in and have her be a decorator. And I really love to decorate. So that's why I tend to lean toward that. I think it should just be an element of it and not the focus. And when it becomes the focus is when it's too boring to read.
Yeah. Agreed.
In my mind.
Yeah. No, that's the right attitude to have, because it's fine as a mechanism for getting them together. But if it's the whole plot, not my favorite. and so you were saying that you have two books in different formats that are newly released. Is that correct?
I do. The way that my particular publishing works is my primary publisher is based in London, and that publisher is Book Couture. They're under Hachette, and they publish my books first. My editor's there. Everyone I work with is there. And so my books come out and they are published in worldwide ebook. And then later, Grand Central, Forever Grand Central, which is also under Hachette, will release them in mass paperback, select titles in mass paperback, and they'll be in the U.S. stores. So I have two books that are out, because currently at Barnes & Noble, Walmart, a couple other places, you will find it started with Christmas, which has been out on ebook for a year, but it's just now hitting stores here in the U.S. So it started with Christmas, is in paperback, mass market, in stores in the U.S. But then I also have Christmas at Silver Falls, which is literally hot off the press, just came off my keyboard, and that is on ebook currently, worldwide, and you can get it through Amazon and all the other ebook retailers.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading both of those books, because I've really enjoyed the two that I have read. And so we like to end our interviews with what we call the teen beat questions, and we have our Christmas version of sort of silly questions that we would like to ask you. So, all right.
Okay.
What is your favorite holiday drink?
Oh, gosh. Anything with like cinnamon or cream or probably some sort of, you know, the pumpkin spice latte. I'm a pumpkin spice everything. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to try to play that off. but anything like that, I'm on it.
You've been a big fan of the pumpkin cold brew coffee?
I have not tried that.
Oh, I've heard. I don't drink coffee myself, but I've heard from lots of friends that it's the very popular this year at Starbucks. okay, so what is your favorite holiday cookie or treat?
I mean, I have to pick one, all of them, but I do have a specific chocolate chip cookie recipe. Uh-huh. It's Santa's favorite. So Santa always asks that I bake them every year. and it requires like some pretty heavy, you know, like oat grinding and some weird stuff. So, you know, it's a major endeavor, but that's the one cookie I can think of. I've posted a few times at Christmas time. I posted the recipe.
Oh, that sounds yummy. Okay. What is your favorite Christmas song or carol?
All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Yeah. Can't beat that.
I love that one.
Mariah Carey, Queen of Christmas.
I know, right?
Okay. What is your favorite Christmas movie or holiday film?
I think Home Alone just always gets me. I watch it every single year, but I love like the Christmas Vacation movie. It depends on my mood, really. But Home Alone would be my go-to, I think.
I love Home Alone. That's like a foundation movie for me. It was
everyone has to watch that movie.
Yeah. I saw it when I was 9 years old with my grandparents, and it was the first in the theater, the first movie that I ever really remember laughing hard at, you know, so hard. and so it still gets me. It still makes me laugh. And it's really sweet, actually. It has a very sweetheart to it.
Yeah, so I agree with you.
It's a good choice. Okay. What is a favorite holiday tradition that you love to do?
Every single year, my kids and I make a gingerbread house. And it's always a complete disaster. It never looks like it's supposed to.
Yeah.
I always just buy this little, you know, this $9.99 kit. So I don't bake gingerbread or anything, but I buy those little kits and we build one, and it is always just a total mess. It's a pile of candy and dripping icing and a mess. And then they just want to eat it right away.
Right.
So usually I'll have to, I'll make them let it sit for at least an hour so I could stare at our creation, and then I'll let them start to nibble on it.
You're like, I need at least the photo for Instagram.
Right, I know, even the mine are not photo worthy. Usually I'll tweet the photos and it's kind of a ha-ha, look at this.
That's funny. You're like, it's like one of those ads, you know, that this is the expectation, beautiful, you know, like Disney World. Type tell gingerbread house, and then reality.
that's
a tornado
all the way.
That's funny. All right, what is a memorable Christmas gift you've either given or received? Like when you were a little kid, did you have your Red Ryder BB gun kind of moment that you wanted something really bad?
I don't know. I mean, I can't really think of a toy, but my wedding was at Christmas because I love Christmas so much.
Yeah.
And when I was visiting in Wales, I saw these love spoons and I just fell in love with them because they're whittled out of wood. And each one of them has a story based on what's whittled in the spoon, this wooden spoon. And so for my bridesmaids, I got each of them a Welsh love spoon as their gift for being in my wedding. And hung them on ribbons so that they could put them on the tree. And so I think that was the most thought I've ever put into like a Christmas gift.
Yeah, that is so
cute. That I can remember.
You should work that into a story. That's really cute. I like that. okay. So Scrooge or the Grinch, which one would you pick?
Ew. Scrooge, because you can work on him.
Yeah. Okay. Clear lights or colored?
Clear.
Okay. Snowball fight or build a snowman?
Snowball fight.
Okay. Would you say you are a good gift wrapper or not?
Yeah, I'm like a psycho origami gift wrapper. Like all my friends know, like it's going to be perfect. Like the little points like line up with the paper and everything. I'll spend hours on it.
That's
no OCD.
Yeah, no, that's good. Okay, last question. Do you have an ugly Christmas sweater?
I don't, but that's not saying I wouldn't wear one. I just don't have one.
Yeah. Well, you should get one. You should definitely get one. Well, very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was really fun to get to talk with you. We'll have links for your books in the description section, but if people want to follow you on social media, all that fun stuff, how can they do that?
I'm Jay Hale Author on Twitter. I think I'm Jenny Hale Author on Facebook, but if they need to find me, if you go to www.itsjennyhale.com, you can find all the links to all my socials.
Great. Great. We'll have that all in the description section as well. And you can follow me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media and iTunes and YouTube and Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. And you can follow the podcast at Hallmarkies Pod and Hallmarkies Podcast all over the place. If you're listening on iTunes, please leave us your ratings and reviews. We really appreciate that. And if you're listening on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. We sure appreciate that as well. Consider becoming one of our patrons. We have so much fun with that. And we are just zooming ahead. We had a episode every single day this week, which is crazy, but we had so much fun doing it. And thank you so much, Jenny, for coming on. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.